You are listening to Manimalism. Don't ask yourself why.
Manimal!
Oh boy, I really was asking myself why this week. My goodness.
Yeah, well, this week we are exploring the fifth episode of the series entitled High Stakes, which originally aired November 4th, 1983.
I'm just going to give away the plot of this episode of HP Podcraft, this bonus episode. This is going to be a little Manimal plus random thoughts.
Yeah, there's very little going on in this episode. The crime is that it's boring.
It's boring in the classical B-movie sense, in that a lot of it is stock footage.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. I think that it's sort of their bottle episode. If the bottle was just laziness, I think they booked up Sunset Ranch for the day or a part of Griffith Park or something like that.
Yeah.
And so this is set in and around a horse track. The only time you see the actual racing in the horse track itself, it's all stock footage. And then they cut back to them in bleachers or at some random barn. And of course they make use of the warehouse of boxes again. So they just sort of wrote a plot around some locations.
I went and looked at the original TV schedule for this, you know, just to kind of see what was going on.
In your stack of TV guides in your hoarding room?
Now we have, yes.
You went and you got it out?
I do. I've hoarded all the TV guides.
Finally, it's paid off!
From 1978, November, the second week of November, that's when I started my collection. finally used it. But do you remember right before this aired, there was a sitcom called Jennifer Slept Here, starring Angelian. Do you remember that show?
I don't at all.
Oh boy. I loved this show. The premise is a famous actress has died and she is a ghost living in her apartment. This family moves in. There's a 14-year-old teenage boy who's, you know, real savvy and sassy. And he's the only one that can see her, but she's got like powers. She can move stuff around. She can go through walls. She can do. And so she kind of helps him be awesome is the whole kind of premise. Wow. Like, I was really into it. And I think it was maybe the beginnings of some kind of sexual awakening for me as well. I was pretty young. I was like either 10 or 11 about this time.
That's why you're into ghosts now.
That's why I'm really attracted
to
ghosts. That's
when it began.
But she's very attractive. And she's, I went back and watched some of the pilot episode of it, and she's really funny and charming.
Angelian? Oh, heck yeah.
I didn't remember how rad she was. I mean, she's still alive.
I'm having deja vu. I feel like maybe we've had this conversation before. There must have been a time we were covering some ghost story and we've brought up Jennifer Slept Here before.
Oh, my God.
Because I kind of remember you synopsizing it for me. But Heather and I watched It's a Living, which is another show that she was on a few years later.
I think it was before that. I think It's a Living, she was like a side character on, and this came out afterwards. And made,
oh, is that right?
And she got the kind of the lead role in this.
I certainly, when we were rewatching the pilot for that, and I have no idea why we were, but I thought, oh man, I haven't thought about this in a long time, but she got into my brain somehow as you know, the kind of girl that that would be my type, quote unquote. You know, it's like I just, she's really funny, you know, leads with that. She's obviously beautiful and stylish, but she's just, she's so funny. I really like Angelina. Yeah. This reminded me, this conversation we're having right now is when I was a kid, my dad and his friends would get together and be like, that Veronica Lake, huh? This bonus episode is going to have everything. That was our old guy theater segment.
Sure.
Now back to the story.
This episode, High Stakes, starts off at the racetrack with Dr. Jonathan Chase and Ty watching the ponies. Jonathan spots a very attractive blonde rich woman named Kathy Bonin. She's played by actress Tracy Scoggins, and I recognized her from Babylon 5, but she was also on Deep Space Nine. And then what I really knew her from was Lois and Clark, because she played Cat Grant. Now we see this whole business with a skydiving show, and one of the jumpers passes out, and Manimal, to save this passed out skydiver, turns into a hawk, flies in, and pulls the chute to save his life.
This episode was sort of like a theme park ride in a really accurate sense, in that it was so super boring for one quick amazing thing.
Yeah.
If you really think about it.
Yeah, sure.
The entirety of the theme park ride is mostly standing in line, which is most of what this was. But the hawk pulling the string, and also the announcer was killing me. Because it was just a guy in a VO booth, and he had to tie together Simon McCorkindale sitting in the stands, Tracy Scoggins looking surprised, some parachutists, a hawk. I mean, he was just watching footage going, guys, I don't know what to make of this. I think he was drunk, too. He was just going, wow, all part of the plan. He was saying stuff announcers would never say, too. He was, like, saying plot details. That hawk saved him, guys. I guess it was all part of the show. Yeah, he saved the thing, even though it was great.
Oh, golly. Okay, now let's get into the real meat of this plot. The baddie is called McGann, and he's got this idea of swapping out horses. He drugged the parachute guy. That's what happened to distract everybody, and they did a horse swap. So during the race, Kathy recognizes that the horse that is actually racing is not the horse that they said. It's not Papa's Lad. It's Splendid Dancer.
You're killing me.
Okay, so...
There's some kind of horse swap.
There's a horse swap.
Plan.
Splendid Dancer is the horse that was at one point kidnapped, the ransom wasn't paid for, and is presumed dead. Now, she swears to God that this horse that she raised from a cult is actually racing and going under the pseudonym Papa's Lad.
There is a cute horse at one point. There's like a foal that you get to see, so
oh,
I like
yeah.
that.
That's pretty, that was very adorable.
I like a cute horse.
It was really nice. Splendid Dancer is like the best racing horse ever, and the horse that he swapped is a crap horse. So Ty, he made all these bets on Splendid Dancer, and they won all this money. There's an evil female jockey. Jonathan breaks up a girl fight. Jonathan, of course, believes Kathy.
He's really handsy with
he's really
Tracy
handsy.
Scoggins in this.
Yeah. Really handsy with her. He spots the wagon taking away Splendid Dancer because they swap the horses back after the race.
Oh, yeah.
And they chase after him, and a dude in the back with the horse pulls out a shotgun and freaking starts shooting at him.
One wonders why he didn't just shoot off that shotgun in the air instead of drugging a parachutist. Because presumably if Manimal wasn't there...
Yeah.
That man dies, right?
He would be dead.
To cover this horse swap.
McGann is a murderer. Definitely tries to murder people many times during this thing. But this guy driving in the...
Yeah.
So what I don't get is Jonathan Chase doesn't seem to pay attention to license plates because, you know, attempted murder.
No,
and
he
could have just gone to his police friends and said, yeah, the guy's in this car. Let's check the registration on this thing because somebody tried to murder me.
Well, the thing that's important is there's a better option, which is going to the taxidermist.
Yeah. We get an unnecessary scene where Officer McKenzie is undercover as a sex worker. Then they go undercover on the ranch to see if they can find Splendid Dancer. Ty's obsessed with his ripped up ticket because he thought he lost, but now he thinks that the race might, because it was actually Splendid Dancer, so he might actually get his money back. So he's trying to tape all of his ripped up tickets together, and there's this whole...
Hey, you know what? There was something interesting that happened during this section, though.
Uh-huh.
With Dale. What's her name in the
McKenzie.
Show?
McKenzie. Yeah.
There's some chauvinistic stuff that happens where Jonathan Chase is always kind of trying to run the show.
Sure.
And later, and they have kind of a funny conflict. But there's this portion here where you kind of see why Jonathan Chase doesn't let her run things. Because she's a New York police detective, right?
Uh-huh.
She, like, pretends to make out with a guy out of nowhere to get him out of the way while Jonathan's doing some covert stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like, nearly rapes this guy, honestly. She's just, like, aggressively trying to make out with him. And then when he's distracted, she hits him over the head.
I know.
And knocks him out. It's so unnecessary, so against the law, so dangerous. And so I think I understand why Jonathan...
Yes.
Keeps her in check a little.
Keeps her in check, yeah. She doesn't seem to be playing by the rules. But, you know, Los Angeles in the 80s, the police department probably wasn't.
See, because of where they actually shot this, you identified it as Los Angeles. But no, I think this is supposed to be New York.
Oh, yeah, New York. I'm sorry. Yeah. Even though everything is obviously Los Angeles, it's supposed to be New York.
Yeah.
All the vegetation, all the plants, the landscape. We get to your favorite part of the whole thing. Jonathan has tracked down this taxidermist that McKenzie overheard McGann talking to. To get in... Manimal turns into a panther, as he does almost every episode. And as a panther, he goes into the records room and he opens up the drawer with his little panther paws. They've got insert shots of panther paws going through paperwork. It is so freaking fun. I was laughing out loud at that. I was ready for him to like have a close up of the panther's face and then little reading glasses would come up to his eyes.
Oh,
they didn't do that.
But there was a part... No, but there was a part where he was going through the files and then they were in the other room and he stopped and checked. They weren't coming in and then he returned to his task. So far, Heather's watched these things with me. This time she was busy and coming in and out of the room and she was like Lady Luck because she came in during the parachute part. She came in when McKenzie was going crazy and, you know, raping and beating people. And then She came in for this, and we laughed so hard at that panther doing research. There was no reason for him to do the research as the panther. Speaking of that, Knight Rider's on Netflix right now, the old Knight Rider show.
Oh, okay. This,
I'm not typically a nostalgic person, actually don't watch a lot of things like that, but that's a perfect kind of thing to throw on while you're eating. So I put it on, the pilot, and she walked in and goes, wait a minute, run that back. And it was right when Michael Knight meets Kit for the first time, the car.
I'm all around you, Michael.
And the car, out of a dark garage, goes at him. You just see that red light in the dark, and then the car comes toward him and stops at the last second. And I rolled it back, and it is not David Hasselhoff. It's another guy. I swear to God, it was the janitor who was there that day. I'm going to put the time code in the show notes so you can go and look at this. It's so funny. It's not even close to him. It's just some dude in the same clothes. And then to tie it into the show, I'm watching the second episode on a different day, and she walks in and goes, wait a minute, because the car was driving itself towards this gas station. And I thought, yeah, that's pretty cool. I wonder if they had a remote control or something. And she goes, is there somebody in that seat? And I just at that moment, I looked, and they left it in the shot where the guy, there was a man, a human chair situation going on, where there's a person in the seat of the car who's driving it. And he pulled his hand out of the way so that David Hasselhoff could get it in the car. And so you see it at the last minute. You clearly see the human chair, and it's so creepy. So I'm going to put time code for those two moments in the show notes. That was my sort of sub Knight Rider bonus episode within this Manimal, not Manimal.
That's great. Well, a lot of times, too, they would let stuff like that slide because on broadcast television, a lot of those details got lost. But now, thanks to these, they're getting the original prints and doing these new DVDs or this new digital footage stuff. And you can see so much stuff that's going on with these. I know they had a lot of problems with that with the original Star Trek when they were fixing them up. They remastered them because once you went back to the original footage, you could see so much stuff that you weren't supposed to see. So they had to go in digitally and fix a few edges here or some stuff there. And
I mean, we're doing quality control on the time capsule right now, and they're finding reflections of booms and stuff like that. It's a totally professional, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine when you're doing broadcast television and nobody's going to run this back. You're not buying a DVD.
No.
Nobody's getting Knight Rider on video. There's no TiVo. So it just plays and then it's over. And you might catch it a second time that year on the rerun. So you'd let a lot of stuff fly. But that's like Dark Shadows. I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I like the unpolished, we're going out and playing nature of it.
Well, it's almost like live theater in a way. And that's what's sort of interesting about us going back and looking at that stuff, talking about my other podcast, Rich Watches Star Trek, is that when they did these things, they weren't thinking about people rewatching them, except maybe on reruns, but that people would be able to record them, and especially the old series, you know, record them and watch them over and over again. When you're writing those scripts, they were up on these deadlines. They were turning stuff around in like a matter of a day or two. Like having any consistency with past stories or characters or all that stuff, it seems like it's a miracle that they were able to do that at all with the deadlines that they were up against.
And you know what it does for me as an audience member is I can suspend disbelief and forget about all of those production difficulties and just watch the show. I can think about the sub show, which is what you're talking about, like what they were up against, you know, and why they were doing these things to solve these problems. And then there's a third show, I imagine, where all of the things I just take them at face value is actually happening within the context of the show. So, for example, on Dark Shadows, I like to laugh. The Blue Whale is this bar they go to all the time. And there's only two songs that play at the Blue Whale. So I just like to think, again, Josh Bentley and I were talking about like this salesman came, swept in and was like, I've got a jukebox for all your needs. It's got two speeds, slow and fast. You know, this guy just got rooked.
Oh, golly.
So that was a great scene with the panther doing research.
Right, yeah. We find out that somehow this taxidermist did a skin graft on Splendid Dancer to make him look like Papa's lad. Since when do taxidermists have any kind of medical degrees and can do this sort of thing? I don't know. And there's a bunch of guys walking around on lab coats that are shooting at animals in there too.
I know.
Since when do taxidermists wear lab coats? It's all crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It's great, too. Very distractible scientific taxidermist, too, because Jonathan, to escape after doing his research, he lays down on a table and pretends to be dead. And the taxidermist goes, well, I don't remember having a panther in here, but it's all laid out, so let's skin it.
Yeah. Well.
Now, again, Heather comes in during, or she was still there during this part, and she did the thing where she accepted the reality of it, because she goes, oh, no, which is funny to me.
They're going to stab him.
Yeah. He put himself into danger, and then he just gets up and runs out, because why wouldn't he have done that to begin with?
It doesn't make
sense. Also, why would they think it's a dead panther? I just feel like you would smell and feel the heat from that large animal.
Just seeing it breathe. I mean, there's a different energy when there's a live animal there than there is a dead animal. It's crazy.
That's why I'm opening my panther retreat, man, because of that different energy. It's just something you can experience. I want to get into this Tiger King game.
Kathy, for some reason, I don't know if she goes rogue. I was kind of mentally tuning out.
I was physically tuned out, too. I actually turned in the other direction at one point.
She goes to the ranch to check to see if the horse is, in fact, Splendid Dancer, because they've got tattoos in their lips. So they know for sure which horse is which. So cosmetic stuff doesn't matter. And she looks at the tattoo, and it's Splendid Dancer. She gets caught. McGann plans to have her killed, but somewhere else. So he says, take her somewhere away. But they don't have time to take her away, so they just stick her in the basement. Ty tries to rescue her, but then he gets caught as well. Mackenzie and Jonathan then pose, as you were saying, as a horse breeder and a trainer, but they're married, or there's some... He wants to be brother and sister, and she's like, no, no, let's be husband and wife, and then...
It was funny. They had an argument in the car about who should lead the charge in their deception, and then she pitched her side, and he didn't want to do it, and then she just did it anyway. Yeah. She just comes in and goes, this is my horse trainer.
She goes to the stables and sexually assaults this poor ranch hand who probably is just a guy working as a ranch hand. He didn't do anything.
It was crazy, man.
First, she sexually assaults him. Then she just assaults him, knocks him unconscious. Jonathan turns into a horse. She rides him. Mackenzie is riding Jonathan Chase, which you think, oh, man, that's there's so much material that can go on there, all this innuendo and all this... No, nothing. It's just completely boring. It's the most boring thing of it. They chase on horseback. They chase Ty and Kathy, who are being taken to their death. They stop them, arrest everybody. Captain Riviera shows up at the very end. Kathy and Splendid Dancer are reunited. That's the end of the episode. I'm done with it.
You imagine that at some point he's going to turn into a beast of burden and she's going to ride him. Seems like that's going to happen. Maybe they teased it out even. And so for it to happen and be that boring. But, you know, I think they built the whole show around that because they had her up. She's going to come up and ride the horse and we'll get footage of that. So how could we use the space?
Mm-hmm.
I think everything was on the ranch.
Yeah. It seemed like they had a ranch day or two. And then they were maybe even a week on the ranch. I don't know how long these things take to shoot when you're doing TV stuff. But, you know, they had animals and animals are not easy to work with all the time. So especially skittish panthers that you just have to get a lot of stock footage. And
you just got to keep a lot of cardboard boxes around and they remain calm for the most part, I think. You know, something that I find interesting, I was thinking about, we're coming up, this is the last day of the month and we're going into Werewolf Month.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the story, The Werewolf of Ponkert. Now, here's my Lovecraft content for the episode. That story grew out of him suggesting, what if you did a story from the werewolf's perspective? Prior to that, the werewolf was always a monster, if there was going to be a werewolf story. And I find that interesting that we're doing that story from the werewolf's perspective as the first story in February, when we kicked off January with the Anne Rice story, and you made a point that she was the first one to say, what's the perspective of the vampire?
Yeah.
But you know what's funny about that is it erases the monster aspect. So even though these are nominally monsters, the minute you see things from their perspective, it starts being a sort of man versus society story.
Sure.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
Here are the traditions of this monster type, and how do you chafe against them? The newbie that doesn't want to follow the rules, it becomes the story.
Right.
Almost every time you do that. I think it's because, and it's why sometimes we'll say like those remakes of Halloween that Rob Zombie did, where they go into Michael Myers' backstory, it erased him being a monster. So you can't tell the monster story anymore.
Right.
Once you get the perspective of the monster.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing that Lovecraft suggested, that considering that, you know, he says the greatest fear is fear of the unknown. It's not a fear that is a forever, like once it is known, then it's not a fear anymore. So really there are no monsters. We're just on a spectrum of knowing the monster. Because even if, say, a person is just a murderer, we're able to say in nature, look at a species that's like that and not judge them. You know, this shark does that or this wasp does that. I mean, that's just kind of how they're programmed. And you can kind of think that about anything. Once you understand it, it ceases to be monstrous.
Sure. Especially once you empathize with these things, then it makes it relatable and even less frightening.
Right. I find that in cultural change, there's a little bit of like we're comfortable having some level of monster all the time. And I totally understand it. But sometimes resistance to change is going, well, if I understand that it's not a monster anymore, where does it stop? Are we just going to understand everybody and have no monsters? Sometimes what it feels like.
Well, yeah.
Because if there's no monsters, then what am I afraid of?
Maybe the monster inside of you.
Oh, my gosh. See, these are the kind of deep thoughts I have when I'm not actively trying not to think about an animal. Let me ask you something else as sort of a strategies question.
Okay,
a segment here.
Let's do it.
If you were to have, because sometimes we did the Nutcracker and the toys were coming to life and it was like everything came to life. The candy figurines, the Nutcracker himself, the army men.
Right.
But if you were to have some specific toy type come to life, you could choose. It could be G.I. Joes or Barbies or Transformers or Hot Wheels. Like, what would that be for you if you knew that you could breathe life into a toys? What would those toys be?
I just have more questions. Like, what do you mean by alive? Is it that it would become conscious and it would have a personality and it would think?
Yeah. Let me put rules on it so you know.
Okay.
So like you would say, oh, I wish G.I. Joes would come to life. That means all the G.I. Joes come to life and we're going to have to live alongside them.
Wait, all of my G.I. Joes or all the G.I. Joes across the world?
All of the G.I. Joes across the world.
Oh, that's horrific. I would say, I guess Hot Wheels, they seem pretty innocuous. You know, they can just kind of roll around.
Oh, man, you know what? I think we just came up with a good idea for a movie because you know how I'm always saying that Chucky's dumb? Haunted doll movies don't scare me because I just beat the go ahead, you know. But what about this? What if there was like a Cabbage Patch Kid or a Beanie Baby, like some kind of craze where people bought up all of these dolls? And then the craze passed and they didn't want them anymore. So most of these things are in landfills and stuff. And then for some reason, they all come to life.
Out of the landfills.
So that it's like Chucky plus a zombie movie where there's like a lot of them. And they're all broken up and old and screwy. That would scare me because a lot of anything is scary. That would be more like Gremlins or something. That's the free idea segment of the show.
There you go. That's free.
Let's bring in a last one while we're on the tip of the free idea and the movie topic.
Okay.
Segment. This is a question I have for you because you're a big Star Wars, Star Trek guy. This is not really a question as much as it is just a discussion topic, which is why do they not have any pacifist characters in Star Wars? Considering that it's about war and they have these Jedi Knights who seem to be in that good direction, but they kill people all the time and they enforce laws sometimes that they don't enforce in other situations. And they're like cool with slavery and, you know. So they're very disappointing. I always wondered, especially because in the first movie, they set up, you know, that you can stun people. It boggled me why you would shoot anybody unless they were going to be a persistent threat when you've got the whole galaxy to put between you and others.
Yeah.
I would just like it in Star Wars if there was a person who just wouldn't use lethal force with anybody. Because when I watch old Kung Fu movies, they have those characters.
Oh, right,
they have very interesting fight scenes if they're a Tai Chi master or something, using the other person's momentum against them, letting people self-destruct instead of doing it yourself, or at the very least, getting people out of your way if you need to. Like, I'd love to see a guy that had devices that used pitches of sound to disable people for a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I just don't understand why, if that's in superhero stuff, why isn't it in Star Wars? That's all. And I thought maybe you'd go, oh, but there's this character called Blacka Laka Chaka. That's what I was hoping for.
There are some Jedis in the extended Star Wars universe that are complete pacifists, that don't even use lightsabers because they won't fight. But they're pretty minor characters and don't do much because it's called Star Wars. It's not called Star Pacifism.
Okay, that's weak justification of that, though, you know? That's like saying it's called Jaws. Why would you want to put human characters in this movie?
To be eaten!
To
Star Trek is a prime example of a show that tries to use pacifism. They really do go out of their way not to fight people and not to impose their views or their ethics on them. Obviously, the show fails many times and they do resort to violence and they do impose their ideals and ethics on other people, but they at least acknowledge it and really try to not do that. Whereas Star Wars, it comes out of the pulps and Japanese cinema and
Star Wars. I'm not forgetting what Star Wars is. You are right that it is Star Wars, but I just find that now that they've developed it to an extent where you can sort of tell different stories within.
Yeah, I think that would be rad. I think it would be rad to have a pacifist character in there that tries to negotiate and deal with violent people in nonviolent ways, just like Manimal.
Yeah, you know, Manimal did a fair amount of that this time.
Was he
violent in this episode?
No, he saved a guy. He snuck in as a panther, didn't attack anybody, and he let a woman ride on his back.
You're right, boy. Oh my God, the character was right in front of me all the time.
It was there. Dr. Jonathan Chase, pacifist.
Dr. Jonathan Chase, but in Star Wars. He can turn into Minox.
Wait, can you? Hold on, I'm going to start.
Banthas.
Start writing this down. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. This is probably my least favorite episode of Manimal. There's one coming up, that The Breath of the Dragon. Oh my God.
That's a good one.
That is so good. But we're not going to do it for a while. I like pacing the Manimal because there's only 8 episodes and then we'll be done with it. So I say one a year.
Also, some people don't like it. Some people were grousing that we were doing this at all. But then when I looked, I was like, we haven't done one of these in a year or so. Calm down. Hey, this is also, I have to say, this was a potpourri month.
Yeah.
You know, we did all kinds of stories. And also this bonus episode, we did all kinds of bonus episodes within the construct of a Manimal.
Wow. Look at that.
Lots of topics came up.
Well, I want to thank you guys for supporting us at this level and being amazing. If it wasn't for you, Chad and I wouldn't keep doing the show. We'd be just crying our eyes out.
That's absolutely right. We don't take it for granted. We're going to have lots more great programming coming up in this spot this year, including some more, you know, maybe some radio drama stuff we've been talking about, more interviews, lots of great stuff. So watch this space and hopefully you'll keep supporting us. Thanks so much for doing what you do. I'm Chad Fife.
I'm Chris Lankin. You've been listening to the bonus content, Manimalism.
Don't ask yourself why.
You are listening to Manimalism. Don't ask yourself why.